Welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast. I am your host, Katie Kangas, and each week on the show, we will talk about how to take flight and follow your dreams as a solopreneur architect. In this episode, I talk with Tirsa Wodash. Tirsa built her practice around the specific needs of her immediate community. The way she integrates with her community and clients is like a heron. A heron will stay very still in a lake, so still that the heron becomes part of the environment. The surrounding fish don't even recognize the heron is there. The heron gets a close-up view of the fish swimming by, much like Tirsa's intimate understanding of her clients as they start their small retail businesses. She is then able to wait until the right project swims by before catching it up. The projects she catches are problems that her clients need to have solved, and Tirsa is waiting for just the right time to act. I talked with Tirsa about being in just the right place at the right time to be a resource for her ideal client, small business entrepreneurs. Welcome, Tirsa Wodash. It is awesome to have you on the Flying Solo Podcast. We are talking to solopreneurs. I am a solopreneur, you are as well, but we're also just creating our own firms. We both started in 2020. I'm kind of revealing that we've chatted for a while about different business things over the years, and it's just been so fascinating to see how you've started your business and what problems you're solving up in Duluth and how you're navigating new projects. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you started Brick and Mortar?
All right. My name is Tirsa Wodash, and I have a practice here in Duluth, Minnesota. I named it Brick and Mortar because it's my mission to help people open their own brick and mortar. I focus on helping small business owners, entrepreneurs, people who have maybe never opened their own space and never worked in commercial architecture or real estate. And I hope to make that process as easy and fun as possible.
Looking at solopreneurs and starting out on your own, you're serving this very public and commercial audience. How did you choose to serve that community of entrepreneurs and business owners?
I found through working with other commercial architects that it was those small businesses, those individual stakeholders that I really enjoyed working with the most. They have a passion for what they are doing, and they're the ones actually using the space. They're not designing it for other folks. I also wanted to focus on what I could do with green building and sustainability, and the folks who don't have a lot of extra dollars to do so can work with existing buildings. And here in Duluth, we have amazing building stock, so that was an opportunity to keep all of those old buildings vibrant and renew our business districts.
I like it when that resilient and sustainable question is also in the best interest of the clients, because it is recycling buildings. It is at its core reusing these buildings. And does anyone approach you saying, I don't know if I should build or if I should reuse an existing space?
People do approach me in that way. I have chosen to focus on commercial renovation. So if that is the case that they decide to build new, I pass them along to other really great architects in our community. But I do think it's an exploration that they need to take. Often people are finding that they can do this for a lot less if they work with something that exists already.
I agree, but sometimes people get nervous about what can of worms are in that building. But there's ways to work with what's there and use practical and smart design methods to really, I don't know, there's just inherent character in those existing buildings that we're not getting. The corbelling of brick, the large window storefronts with these nice depth and other column elements that make it really engaging. Are there any other things you talk with them about to sell it up?
Well, certainly, I mean, you're not building it like they used to, as the old adage goes. Folks really are taken by all of the stone and the brick of these old buildings, and they're selling themselves. It is scary to go into commercial renovation because there is so many unknowns, which is why I am so focused on segregating my services, and I've been breaking things down. Even since we've talked last, things have changed quite a bit, and I'm taking the old traditional five phases of architecture and breaking them down into even smaller bite-sized pieces and putting service packages around them so that folks can feel comfortable with those steps and the deliverables and milestones along the way. And I'm starting at that very beginning. So actually the newest service that I have come out with is what I'm calling the building matchmaker profile. And so we're talking about what the expectations are from a code and a building standpoint for their business function, and building out this profile that they can go search for a building with.
I love that. And it's incredible that you saw that need and you saw how you knew what to do when you see those. And you're putting that in their hands by helping them make smart decisions, which is so much of what we do as architects, is giving them the information they need so that they can make informed decisions. That's just fantastic. I love that. And I know one of the things you did on your website back during COVID was having one of those PDFs that can be purchased. And that was something interesting when you started out your firm, that you had something you can buy online, a PDF, or you can meet with me for this, or I can work with you through your project. And so already you're building in that tiered service, which helps filter out who is going to take up your time and kind of self-categorizing new clients. Are there other thoughts that went into that?
Well, so, I mean, going out on my own was wanting to offer these services that I thought were needed and for folks who couldn't necessarily afford the full-blown scope of things that we do. So that has been my mission, is how can I break things down? How can I put a price and a time frame around things that make what we do tangible and demystify it? and the new services that I'm putting out is to reach people before they sign on the dotted line. Too many people come to me with a space that is inappropriate for what they're trying to do, and then they're surprised and in that very negative way of all of the costly changes that they're going to have to make to that building, unbeknownst to them, just to meet code, that don't serve their business function in a way that their customers will see in the end.
There's a great book by Dan Heath, Upstream, and I feel like that's what you're doing. There's a tale of two men by the river, and they see children in the water, and it's taking every effort that they have to one after another go in and save the children. And finally, one of the brothers is just sick of it, and he starts leaving. And the brother says, "What are you doing? Are you leaving these children to die?" And he said, "No, I'm going upstream to see who's throwing them in the water to stop this." And so I feel like you saw problems downstream, you saw pressure points downstream, and it's just simple things further up in the decision process and making contact points earlier for the client. But how do you get that information in their hands so they can hire you earlier when they aren't even looking for an architect yet?
I mean, that is the million-dollar question. I am doing that with education and with connections with our local entrepreneur group. We have the Entrepreneur Fund, and we have the Small Business Association, and by partnering with them and being part of their expert network, they're spreading that word early for me.
That's incredible.
Social media and educating people on my website, things like that, yeah.
Yeah, the website and the social media cast a broad net, which works for architects willing to do services all over the place. Are you focusing on all over, or are you really focusing in on your close-knit community?
So I'm rolling out these newer services for Minnesota and Wisconsin, where I'm licensed. And then when I feel more comfortable with delivering them online and maybe to larger groups than a one-on-one, then I'll be speaking to my lawyer about how I can do that on a broader sense without breaching the license requirements.
So there's an interesting thing there where to make it more affordable, to make it less of a time, a one-on-one, but how do you provide these services in a way that helps inform people? And then when they're ready for full-on architectural services, you have those packages ready for them to reach out to you.
Well, these early services, I see that I am preparing them to become a more informed client. And if, you know, if I'm able to do this for folks that are outside of where I'm licensed and I'm not choosing to become licensed in those states, then I would be preparing to pass them on. Like, they would then go seek out an architect and they would have a much, like, much better plan. They would be more informed on what they need to be looking for and what the code expects from a building before they talk to that architect. And then hopefully building relationships there, because those architects will be excited to have an informed client.
They're coming to you ready to be better clients. I don't want to say better or worse clients, but when you have an informed client, it's smoother. It's a smoother onboarding, and you can avoid knots and pressure conversations later down the design chain process.
Absolutely. I'm able to educate folks on, I mean, A, the jargon that we use. You know, what is occupancy? What's an occupancy load? What is your classification? You know, how many toilets do you need? Well, how many exits do you need? And so they are looking for a space that accommodates some of those very basic things they know they will need, and then they can kind of speak the language with folks as well. But then going through their program, which I'm changing the name of all of these things because these are not words that speak to my clients anyway. But once they have a program in hand and they understand their space, I mean, they're bringing that to that architect. And in the experiences I've had so far with clients, I'm helping them. They're not even understanding all the spaces that they need. They generally need more space and different variety of space than they initially came to me with. And folks are only the expert in so many things. And at times they're starting a business that isn't even something they've necessarily worked in their past.
And yet that's a really exciting place to be talking with them and helps them focus on this thing that they are newly passionate about and ready to move forward with brick and mortar. Mm-hmm. It's a fun time. It's a fun moment, but it's high stress, high energy. How are you managing those different client aspects when they've got their hand in a million pots, but you've been there. You've started your own business too, and so you can relate to them in that way. Are there certain things you're doing to help them? Like, I get it. I know what you're going through.
Well, so if we're working at that early on stage, it's still very dreamy. But I am not afraid to share where I think they might be being too dreamy. And then, they're taking this information and they're bringing it to the services that can allow them to do the cost-benefit analysis, and they can build up that pro forma and reflect on whether there's ROI to what they're trying to achieve. All of that, I mean, they're spending money up front to save money later if it's a no-go.
That's such a good point. And so can we back up and go back to, there's this entrepreneur group in your city. What is that? And how do other people get that in their cities? Or do they already exist all over and we just as architects don't tap into these resources?
I mean, perhaps. I mean, most communities have that, the small business center type organization. And Entrepreneur Fund is similar, but not the same. They help you for free. And, somebody, grants are paying for it. But they'll help you write your business plan. They'll help you work out your cost-benefit analysis. And they'll do gap lending. So this is a nonprofit organization. So I don't know how you get that started in your community.
But the things to be looking for are local chambers. Sometimes there are funding sources. I know Milwaukee has one, and it's actually associated with a financial institution who has created this dream space.
Yeah, that would be a good association. I mean, the business plan is a big part of it. People need to have a concrete business plan to get funding. And then I think the real gap that's being filled by the Entrepreneur Fund that I don't believe happens with the Small Business Association. And if they hear this and they do provide it, I apologize. But the cost-benefit analysis, the really breaking down what are the costs that you will incur in the operation of this building, not just in the remodeling costs.
If you're ready for it, I can share your bird.
Yes.
So, Tirsa, to me, you just sound like a heron, and it's a Minnesota bird. It is other places too, but a heron actually hunts in many, many different ways. But one of the ways a heron will look for fish or look for food is by standing in the water and standing very still. And they blend in with their community and they know what's going on. But when the right project problem swims along, they are ready to snatch it and they can be there for it. But it's about being in the community and knowing your community. And I feel like you've done that first by becoming an entrepreneur and going through this process. But you also did some very innovative things with being a resource to that fund. Can you describe that?
Sure. Yeah. I used the services of the Entrepreneur Fund and the Small Business Association in starting my business and could see that that folks like myself needed architects, and they were not offering that in their expert network is what they call it. And so they had marketing folks, they had financial folks, HR, things of that nature, which are all needs in starting a business, but nobody to help guide anyone with their actual physical space. And it took me about a year and talking to a few different people to knock down the door enough to say, you need me. You need someone like myself to help people. And so now if folks take out a loan, there's a grant that goes along with that, and they can choose what sort of expert network help they need, and I'm on that list.
That's incredible. So are you realizing some of the connections from that initial effort?
Absolutely. Yep. There's been multiple clients that have helped through that throughout Minnesota and Wisconsin. And it snowballed a bit into being able to help our downtown community with a storefront grant. And there's been two rounds. And I was on the committee of deciding who got the funding. And then I was able to get myself in there for the second round to actually have time with me to help facilitate and make decisions on how they were going to use those funds.
That's incredible. So describe this like effort to apply for grants and how that's also serving your business.
Yeah, so lately in the last handful of months, I applied for 3 grants and I was able to land each of them, which is wild. The first one was a marketing match grant through the city. So it was a smaller pool, and that afforded me the opportunity to do a whole branding exercise. So I had definitely done that very piecemeal, watching free webinars and figuring that out on my own. And as a designer, I don't feel that I am the most copy proficient person. I think in pictures, and so it was really nice to have a lot of copy put together for me and AI prompts and like really set me up. And that has been something I've been able to pass on to the folks who are now helping me with marketing. Instead of like, here's my Google Drive and access to the photos in the folder, just really primitive. I now have this entire branding assets packet. So that was huge to get that help through the city. The next grant, I'm wanting to educate people more and be teaching these things online and build my way up to doing more group facilitating. And that's a new skill. That isn't what we were taught. I'm a expert in architecture, but I'm not an expert in teaching and putting together instruction. So I've reached out to another city program, and the deal with that one is you had to be learning a new skill. So I was able to sell myself in learning a new skill through online instruction design. So that's been mostly paid for, and I am going through that process. I'm going to plug the Bob Pike Group. They were amazing. I learned so much, and I have turned around and used a lot of it already. And that's a local Minnesota outfit as well. And then the third grant is much more free to be used on what I need, and that's the Promise Grant. And that was through the state of Minnesota. And that's going to be used in large part to get me a new computer, which, as you are aware, is the heart of our business. And I have been working on a hand-me-down computer from the beginning that has been limping its way through and could crash at any moment. So I'm very excited.
Don't tempt the spirits of IT. That's so dangerous to say out loud, Tirza. Oh, no. No, I hear you. And yes, those are great opportunities. And wow, often architects, I hear like, oh, I don't have money to spend on marketing. Like, I've felt that. Like, I've got to do it all myself and my extra hours. How are you making it work for you? How did you think to go for these grants?
I started with my clients. My clients were looking for funds themselves, and they were asking what I had heard of. And so I decided to sign up for the economic development email list for the state and for my local community. And, you know, networking and being part of boards and community meetings, I started to hear about things. I would pass things along, and then I started tuning in to a few that could apply to me. And I would say that my recommendation to folks is first sign up so you can hear about things. And then when you're ready, call the person in charge and have a conversation with them about what your intent is and how you think you fit in with that grant. And then listen, do a lot of listening and listen between the lines about what they're looking for. So you can cater your application to what they are looking for. Versus, you know, what you make assumptions about what you want to say. You gotta listen. It's all about listening. And then they get to know you. And now I wasn't some anonymous entity. I had a name and a voice.
And I love it. I don't want to discourage people if they apply for a grant, they don't get it right away. Like, how did she get three in a row? But you've had a long history of going for grants. You're selling yourself short because writing a grant is also marketing copy. So you're doing it. You're just doing it to not a public social media audience.
Yes, which makes it a little less scary, I think. Yeah. And it's not in a tiny soundbite either. It's a little more long form. But yes, I think had I not had the experience of the nonprofit program that I had led previously called Outside the Box, had we not done that and landed numerous grants through that, I don't know that I would have had the same confidence going in, because I understood what the process looks like and, you know, what the questions might be. Yeah.
That's incredible. And
don't expect to land all the grants. It's pretty unheard of.
Even though you did. Yeah. Pretty awesome. And also the diversity of things. Like, if I were to just Google an architecture grant, how do I fund my architecture firm? You're not going to find anything. But by going to the economic development authorities in states or in local cities or counties, you're tapping into those resources. And I love that that's where your clients are going. So you're building a network of people who are also serving your clients. And so that, again, you're just so good at integrating in to your people. I love it, because sometimes people say you're a solopreneur, you're a solo architect, or you're just a single practitioner, you must just be doing residential. And it's like, no, actually, I'm trying to do these more complex projects. And I can because the technology makes it very possible. Outsourcing or insourcing with the firm makes it very feasible, even with more man hours than I can provide. And here's other ways that you're doing it in a way to kind of break the stereotype, break the mold, and be accessible to a whole new range of people who need architectural services. I just love it.
Thank you.
So what are three words that would describe brick and mortar?
I do like this question, and this is the one thing I pondered on before we met. And I chose resourceful, empowering, and collaborative.
I think that resonates very well with what we've heard. And resourceful as a core word for an architecture firm just is very MacGyver. You're going to take this jackknife of a building and you're going to make it work for your client. But you're helping them. You are not letting anything within your realm of influence out of view. You're so aware of so many resources for them. Are there other relationships you're trying to build, any networking that you're trying to do to further connect with potential clients?
I'm hoping to get back into speaking a bit, getting in front of larger groups. I mean, that I feel like I was on my way there, and then COVID hit, and then I, you know, backed way far away from it. So I'd like to come back to more of that in-person networking and doing some of that education in person with groups. And then that leads right back into the building matchmaker profile and helping people understand that there are things that we can help them with before they sign for a lease or purchase a building.
I just had that conversation with a coffee shop proprietor and just said, you know, just realize how much you have to put into this building to even step forward. I know you love the location. I know you love the windows. But how many resources do you have to put into this? And so I love the idea of being able to, that the name, the building matchmaker profile, and not have to break the bank just to get in the doors, but to put that money where it matters in the design and in the maximizing a space. It just makes so much sense. I love it. I'm looking for that to be licensed pretty soon, Tirsa. You better get on that because it's a great idea. I love it.
I did choose the name based off of, like, people know dating matches, right? They know what that means to put together a match. So it was definitely a playoff of that idea.
It's smart. I love it. So we've talked a lot about the clients and projects you're serving and that they do need to fit into your niche for you to be able to fit them in your schedule. Mm-hmm. What are the criteria then?
I mean, in the long-term goal is to walk people through these smaller surfaces, that they are taking those steps and not just calling me up and wanting to be open in 2 months, which is a lot of the phone calls.
That is such a good point, because that is one of the biggest misunderstandings. So how do you go from a five-step process to, hey, here's stage one, you're here? But I love it because my standard contract has not enough touch points for certain projects like that, that you need more touch points within design development for all the pieces that need to be developed, or within schematic design or in construction documents. So I don't know, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about that?
The reason I started with that very beginning before they even do the lease is so that I can educate them on this process early on. It's a really huge misconception that this is, you know, that things start when the hammer swings. People don't understand the length of time and investment of their time and their money that's required long before we submit for a permit. And so hopefully for all of us, I'm going to help inform our clients.
That's awesome. And so some people take the opposite take of like doing design build instead. Mm-hmm. You're trying to really jump upstream. Others are doing design build like, okay, yeah, let's jump in the water. Let's get this project moving and we're going to design it on the fly. That's a very different type of services and it's very time intensive and engagement intensive and frankly a bit stressful if you're not good at handling those on the spot decisions. Is that something, is design build ever going to be an option for your potential clients, or will you make sure they go through this process that you're designing because you think it's in their best interests?
So I'm hoping that they are my clients, at least for these early services. And then if they decide that they need something else that I don't offer, then they're an informed client for someone else. And that makes me very happy.
I like that because there are many professionals practicing. And so finding your fit is you're letting those fish swim by to be grabbed by an eagle or otherwise.
I have learned that over and over again. You're not going to satisfy everyone. Not everybody is your client.
Sometimes we need to hear that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's something else about that. You had also built, remind me, but I think you had a workbook for user design and to talk about how the design of spaces, but you're kind of moving towards what is the design process as your pre-education instead of informing them what you're doing in the design process. Because some architects will say, hey, what does it mean to have a welcoming storefront or to do these things? Are those conversations you have or share on social media? Could you describe what that is like to give anecdotes, little pills of knowledge to your potential clients versus this other onboarding process?
Yeah, that is another part of the services that I offer that are not as fresh as this building matchmaker profile, but also equally important. And that's helping existing business owners improve their storefront. So that's educating on how folks interact with your storefront. So we talk about signage. Talk about lighting. There's so many qualities of lighting to go over. So I've done that in bite-sized pieces on social media. I've done that by creating blogs for the website. I've done that in past speaking engagements, doing presentations to groups of business owners. And I'll come back to that, and that will become another series of online education, another way that I could lead people. So both the front end portion of it with the building matchmaker and the, you know, how do we make a standout storefront? What are the elements of that? What's maybe missing from your storefront that you can implement without an architect? These are things that I could be educating people on that is not a license. I'm not required to be a licensed architect to do so. So those are the ways I think I may be able to reach people beyond the states that I'm licensed in. But that's a conversation that I have not breached with my lawyer.
Understandable. And I appreciate that you do keep those team members on board. You have your team and your own resources to make sure you know who to call with every question that you have. And I think that's a wonderful way to set yourself up for great success. So...
yeah.
Good advice.
Yes. Even though we're solo, it doesn't mean we're alone.
This is so true. So true. I feel like we've talked about how you find clients who align with your mission.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that is folks that come to me. I mean, I'm out there on social media, on Instagram mostly, and I do have a website that I continue to refresh, but it's still mainly word of mouth. Folks are hearing about me from past clients or through the Entrepreneur Fund or Small Business Association and being out there networking. I am part of the, you know, my community business group. I'm supposed to be joining the board of the Lincoln Park Business Group and going to community meetings where other entrepreneurs are. go where your client is. Join those boards, get to know them. And I mean, Duluth has multiple business districts, so there's multiple business groups to attend.
I think something that is so key to how you're practicing and crafting your practice around yourself is that you have specialized. And we're getting a glimpse into what it means to specialize. You are thinking so much about what your client needs in their full journey. And you have gone upstream because that's where you see the problems coming from. I'm curious when you're ready to go downstream to the maintenance of the building and to have that sort of long-term care conversation with those clients as they're continuing to care for these existing buildings. But I love how you've been so thoughtful with every piece of content you're creating and with the moves you're making and where you're directing your firm to specialize. And that takes commitment. How did you decide to commit so far into this one architecture category when you could just be a turkey just gobbling up whatever is lying around? You've really committed to this.
Well, this is where my passion lies. So I figured that out. I figured that out before I started on my own. But I have definitely learned time and time again that every time I take a project that is out of my, you know, my lane, there's regrets there. There's things that happen that remind me that this isn't my client. This isn't my project type. And I keep coming back to how do I refine and offer my services to best meet my ideal client. So I continue to learn lessons, that is for sure.
And so do you feel you've crafted a firm that reflects your personal strengths, hopes, and dreams?
With these new services that I'm rolling out, the more and more I can refine those processes, that is leading me to where I want to be. I still am working more than I'd like to be. Longer hours, weekends at times. So I'm still a work in progress, but I'm building up my team. I have more folks on my team than ever. I don't yet have employees. They're all contract basis. And they all have their own specialty, whether it's marketing, management with software or bookkeeping, getting a good CPA and lawyer. having those supports is huge. And having someone to turn to when you need their services is just, you have to have them in place. If you're going to grow, you need to be able to delegate. And so that is my, this is going to be the year of systems. I'm going to wrap these up, you know, this year up with starting I've hired a person that's going to help me put systems into place so that I am automating where I can and making repeatable processes to simplify and to delegate more. That's going to be huge for me in 2025.
And it's so fun to hear where you're at and where you're going after 4 years and continuing to grow. There's a nice graph that shows where firms start to have growth and they're reaching a great point. And if they don't adapt and keep growing, they're going to plateau. And plateauing is just, you're just going to go back down after that. But you have to keep active in those decisions to keep the growth projection. And so it's really helpful to hear the team that you're putting together and how willing you are to build up that team and to delegate, because that's another reason some of us end up as solopreneurs, not wanting to let things go. But if you don't let some of it go, you can't hold it all. And there's smart ways to be working with other people. And I think that's a great way that you've been leveraging your practice.
It is hard. It is hard to let go and say, oh, someone else can do this as well or better than I have been. And really listening to what it is you enjoy and the parts you enjoy less. And I would say one of the things that has been the hardest for me is not being in control of my schedule, right? That is these projects take a very long time, and hiccups happen, and pauses happen, and leapfrogging the clients and the projects and maintaining a steady schedule is challenging. This is an ebbs and flows type of business. And so by creating these smaller services with a more defined timeline is one of the ways that I'm helping manage my schedule.
That's great. One last question about how you balance personal development with the time you devote to clients and the time you devote to family and the people in your life.
Yeah, I mean, that's an ongoing journey for sure. I have joined local masterminds and groups on purpose to get myself out there. I journal. I mean, that's an off and on, off again, on again, on again type of thing as well. But I'm on in the moment and try to journal at least 15 minutes a day. That helps open things up in a huge way. I take myself on a personal retreat every year, and I reflect back on the year. I read what I wrote for my goals for the year before, and force myself to focus for a couple of days by myself. I highly encourage folks to do that. And then I have my Wednesday Wolf Pack. And this has been happening since 2021. We are diehards. Every Wednesday is Mom's Night Out, and I have zero responsibilities. I meet up with this core group of women. We generally do something active. And then my husband gets his night one night a week. And so we set each other free one night a week. I highly recommend that as well.
I have not heard the term wolf pack. That caught me off guard. That's great. If I hear howling up north, I'll know who's...
Howl back.
Yep. That's a good point.
It happens every Wednesday.
That's amazing. I love it. Well, thank you, Tirsa, so much for opening up your process with brick and mortar. Where can people find you and see the awesome things that you're doing?
Oh, thank you. Yes. So brickandmortar.design. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook, but Facebook is pretty, it's a regurgitation of Instagram, let's be honest. And LinkedIn. My website's where all the good stuff is.
That's great. I love it. And Instagram is where your client is too, because that's where small businesses are trying to make their place on social media too. And you're right there with them, posting regularly.
So now that I have a new dedicated marketing person, I will be much more steady on that. That could be its own conversation.
Yeah, the good, the bad, and the ugly of marketing.
Yes, we could definitely cover an hour on that.
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you so much.
Tirsa Wodash has centered her practice around a specialty. She knows her community because she has lived the entrepreneurial path of her ideal client. Much like a heron, she has settled into her community to blend in and reach people she can help earlier in their design journey. Here are three ways you can better know your community of clients. First, specialize. Choose a specific client that you can serve, then dive into their full journey. For Tirsa, this was looking at what entrepreneurs did before they even had a business plan. These entrepreneurs have a long journey from ideating their business to finally opening the doors to a brick and mortar location. She followed their journey by using local financial resources and programs for entrepreneurs. You don't always need to walk in the footsteps of your clients, although that can really help. You can also join the network and community groups that your clients use. Listen for their pain points and questions. Then you can refine your own marketing to answer those questions. Sometimes this even leads to special types of services, which brings us to our second takeaway. You can create service packages. Think of one problem your client has. Can you package a subset of traditional architectural services to resolve that one problem for your ideal client? Tirsa developed the Building Matchmaker Profile to serve entrepreneurs who were just starting to look for a physical space. This is a resource she can share with realtors or the Economic Development Commission to help entrepreneurs, and it just so happens to get her name and business out there as a professional resource. That way, when questions arise, they know who to call for more information. Other service packages could be master planning, pre-design workshops to build consensus, accessibility assessments, refining curb appeal, or improving user experience, or even conditions assessments. As architects, we learn a variety of skills that can help our clients. Sometimes our clients only need a subset of our skills. Solving their small problems with specific services can build confidence. Our ideal client experiences the value of involving an architect in their design process. This can lead to additional architectural services with that client or to referrals. The final takeaway from this conversation is to move upstream. Connect with your client earlier. Once you better understand your niche, you know where they go for information, and it is very good to know what they are hearing before they call you. Go to those places, virtually or physically. If they are searching online how to find the right building for my coffee shop, consider providing the answer to their question. This could be an article on your website or frequently asked questions page. It could be a post or video on social media. Put the information out there for them to find. If you aren't comfortable with the vast interweb, then consider the community or network groups that your ideal client attends. Consider reaching out to offer a presentation or answer questions on navigating zoning or the ins and outs of ADUs, or what's the scariest thing about moving into an existing building. These can be opportunities to network and present yourself as the expert and thought leader to your niche. Ultimately, create value for your clients. When you align your niche with an area of practice that you love and excel at, these extra marketing efforts can be rewarding affirmations. You get to share what you know about your niche. It doesn't replace the fact that your client needs to hire you. It just helps them find you. Because you are already sitting in the stream, waiting for their problem to swim by. This episode was brought to you in collaboration with Entre Architect, which is a fantastic community for finding like-minded entrepreneurs who are there to support you in your business journey. Please subscribe, share, and join the Flying Solo Movement community. We are just taking flight. Please join this journey for ongoing inspiration, support, and resources. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Katie Kengis. My hope is to encourage aspiring entrepreneurs and architects to soar to new heights and embrace the freedom of flying solo.